Good morning, everyone. I'm Sang Jin. I'm really glad to talk about our exciting research project, MeaPipe. This work was done in collaboration with Scott Marshall, Byung-Gon Chun, and my advisor, Sylvia Ranasamy. In this talk, I introduce MeaPipe, which is a new programming interface for scalable network I/O. BSD socket API exposes many performance issues with a certain class of network workload. So we designed MeaPipe to solve the problem. Let me begin my talk with two different types of network workloads. Imagine a video streaming server or a distributed file system with large blocks. Then your connection is long-lived and you transmit a very large amount of data over the connection. In terms of CPU overhead, this type of workload is very cheap. You can saturate a tangent link with only a single CPU core, so this is not what we care about in this work. On the other hand, let's think about mesh-oriented workload, where connections are short or messages are small-sized. What I mean by short connection here is that each connection has a relatively small number of messages, rather than the absolute duration of the connection. This workload turns out to be very CPU intensive, wasting a lot of CPU resource for the network I/O. BSD socket API has been a de facto standard for almost 30 years, but unfortunately, it exposes many performance issues, especially with mesh-oriented workloads. Let's consider this sample code. We can find some potential performance issues here. First, you make a system call for every I/O operation. And as indicated by previous work, exception mode switching between kernel and user is known to be very expensive. And second, for multi-core applications, the listening socket is shared by all CPU cores. The shared accept queue becomes a hotspot in this case, significantly limiting the multi-core scalability. And finally, the BSD socket API is based on file descriptors, inheriting its own overhead in the operating system kernel. So how bad is bad? Let's quantify the performance of BSD socket API with mesh-oriented workload. We implemented a simple network server on an 8-core Linux machine with a tangent network interface card. Each client initiates a TCP connection to the server, and once connected, the client and server exchange request chain response. And I define this request and response pair as a transaction. After 10 transactions, the connection is closed, and the entire process is repeated over and over again. This is the default setting of the experiment. And first, we varied the message size to see how it affects the performance. And next, we focused on the impact of connection length. And finally, we investigated the multi-core scalability. This graph shows the throughput over various message sizes and the total CPU utilization of the 8 cores. The result shows that small messages negatively affect the performance. For very small messages, the server was not even able to saturate the tangent link we used. And for medium-sized messages, the CPU utilization was actually pretty high, consuming more than 50% of CPU cycles just for the network I/O. This is pretty bad because you will need at least 16 kilobytes or larger messages. Otherwise, you will not have enough CPU resources for your application-specific logic. The next experiment is about how the performance is affected by the connection length. In this graph, the x-axis represents the connection length, in other words, the number of transactions for each connection. As you can see, the throughput highly depends on the lifespan of connections. And if we compare the single transaction case with long connections, the throughput we get is about 19 times lower. And you can avoid using short connections by reusing open connections, but unfortunately, it's not always possible. For example, the HTTP protocol supports persistent connections, but typical HTTP connections are still pretty short because objects are distributed across servers, so your connection to a specific server does not have enough spatial locality. Maybe you can say, oh, the number of CPU cores is ever increasing, so the low performance today may not be a big deal tomorrow. But this is not the case, unfortunately. In this experiment, we investigated how the performance goes up with increasing number of CPU cores. The result shows that as we add more cores, the marginal performance gain quickly diminishes. Ideally, the performance should linearly scale with the number of cores, but the actual scaling behavior is much worse than that. Even if we have more than 8 cores, according to Amdahl's law, the scaling gap will get wider and wider. And now let's move on how we designed MetaPipe to address those performance issues. In BSD socket API, the event multiplexing mechanism and general send receive operations are two separate concepts, making programming complicated and limiting many performance optimization opportunities. Also, the event multiplexing mechanism of BSD socket API does not support the semantics of disk files, so we have to have separate mechanisms to mix network operations and disk operations at the same time. Finally, as we have seen, the BSD socket API has high overhead for mesh-oriented workload, so it does not, and it does not scale well on multi-core systems. This is why we set these design goals to overcome the limitations of BSD socket API. The performance of multi-core systems can be broken into two aspects: how well each core performs and how it snowballs with multiple cores. The causes of performance issues of network servers are pretty well identified by previous work, so I'm not going to explain them in detail. In MetaPipe, we introduced three optimization techniques to address those causes. The best part is that all those techniques are implemented under the roof of a single unified interface. I'm going to talk more about those optimization techniques. In MetaPipe, each I/O object, such as a TCP connection or pipe or disk file, is represented as a handle. The concept of handle is very similar to that of file descriptor, but the difference is that the scope of handles is limited within a channel. Each per core channel maintains its own set of handles and multiplexes I/O commands and their completion notifications. I'll briefly explain about the channel abstraction and how it enables many optimization opportunities. In BSD socket API, all I/O commands are individually done for each file descriptor. On the other hand, in MetaPipe, all I/O operations are multiplexed by the channel. In this way, we can easily aggregate I/O operations and process them in a batch. Next, suppose that we have three CPU cores in the system. Then the shared backlog, backlog queue becomes a hotspot being contended by all CPU cores. In MegaPipe, each core has its own channel for communication between kernel and user. Then we can distribute incoming connections across those channels without using a globally shared accept queue. So we can avoid the contention for the connection establishment process. Within the kernel, each connection is represented as a file in Unix-like operating systems. The problem is that those objects should be represented as globally visible data structures in the virtual file system layer. This is pretty bad because globally visible objects mean that they need expensive synchronization between cores whenever a connection is established or closed. But in MegaPipe, we limited the scope of a handle within a per core channel, so we can easily bypass the VFS layer, eliminating any synchronization issues. I'm going to talk more about MegaPipe API functions, but not in detail. Please refer to the paper for details. There are functions to manage your channel, and then you register your I/O objects to the channel. For I/O operations, MegaPipe exposes similar interface, similar functions to those of BSD socket API, such as accept, receive, send, etc. And once those I/O operations are done, you can dispatch the result from MP dispatch function. There is a fundamental difference in semantics between BSD socket API and MegaPipe I/O API. Let me give you some details. Suppose that you have two connections and you want to multiplex them. BSD socket API is based on readiness model, which means you first wait for the readiness of sockets, and once they become ready, then you actually issue the I/O command. But the problem here is that you cannot aggregate multiple I/O commands in this model. The bottom line is that you immediately get the result of the first receive function, but the control flow after that function may depend on the result of the previous function. On the other hand, MegaPipe is based on completion notification model, which means that you just blindly issue asynchronous I/O commands and get notified once they have been actually done. This model allows us to aggregate I/O commands without any code speculation. And there are also other advantages of this model. This model is conceptually simpler for programmers because you don't need to keep track of the readiness of sockets. And it's also compatible with disk files, which is not the case with BSD socket API. So you can multiplex disk I/O and network I/O with a single unified interface. Those asynchronous I/O operations are aggregated by the MegaPipe user level library and delivered to the kernel module in a batch. The good thing is that this batching is transparently done by the MegaPipe framework, which means your application does not care about batching. It's just automatically done by MegaPipe. In the same way, the kernel module also delivers the completion notification event back to the user level library in a batch. With batching of I/O commands and completion events, we can effectively amortize the system call overhead. Another optimization we made is leafing socket partitioning. In MegaPipe, a leafing socket is not globally shared anymore. Instead, when a leasing socket is registered to a channel, MailPipe spawns a local accept queue in the core. In this way, each core can have a completely partitioned view of the leasing socket. After this initialization, each per core accept queue is only locally accessed. So we can eliminate all the synchronization and remote cache access overhead caused by the shared accept queue. And the last optimization we made in MailPipe is called lightweight socket, which lets you skip the file abstraction layers. Those file instance, dentry, and inode objects are not necessary for sockets in most cases, since sockets are ephemeral and rarely shared. For example, this dentry is used for mapping between a file name and its inode, but it's kind of nonsense for sockets because sockets does not have file name. This file instance abstraction is used when an opened file is shared by other file descriptors, but this is very special case for sockets. This inode object represents permanent disk file metadata cached in memory, and it's referenced by open system call. This inode is unnecessary for sockets because sockets are not permanent and not opened by the open system call. Instead, MailPipe can bypass all those abstraction layers and directly point to the TCP kernel object. In case application needs the full generality of regular file descriptors, for example, legacy CGI applications, MailPipe provides a fallback option to convert a lightweight socket into a regular file descriptor. For evaluation of MailPipe, we performed a series of micro benchmark tests, and we also adapted two popular real-world applications, namely Memcached and Nginx. We adapted our micro benchmark to use MailPipe instead of BSD socket API. And the first measurement is about the throughput improvement over various message sizes. And as you can see in the graph, MailPipe greatly improves the throughput, especially for small messages. It's interesting that the performance improvement goes up beyond four cores. This is because our server has two quad-core CPUs, so two processors are involved when we use five or more cores. The synchronization and remote cache access cost become much higher when you have multiple processors in your server, and MailPipe can effectively mitigate them while the baseline Linux does not. There are some points where the improvement decreases. This is just because of the tangy access link bottleneck we used for the experiments. Now let's move on to the multi-core scalability. We measured how the throughput scales with various number of CPU cores. For the baseline server, the parallel speedup highly depends on the connection length, as I mentioned earlier. The performance of short connections stagnates as we add more cores. And surprisingly, the performance of very short connections even collapsed. On the other hand, MailPipe shows much better scaling behavior regardless of connection length, showing almost linear scalability. We adapted two real-world applications for macro benchmark, Memcached and Nginx, to use MailPipe. The porting process was fairly straightforward, like a couple of days. Those two applications have very different characteristics. Memcached is not very scalable since the object store is shared by all threads and there is even a global lock. On the other hand, the Nginx architecture is highly scalable, as you can imagine from the properties of HTTP workloads. And let's take a look how this difference affects the performance improvement from MailPipe. For memcached test, we used the default configuration of memacelab performance measurement tool. We varied the connection length to see how it affects the performance. And as you can expect, MegaPipe greatly improves the performance with short connections. But as the connections get longer, the improvement quickly diminishes, and there is virtually no improvement at all for permanent connections. Maybe you can say the best practice of memcached is using permanent connections, so MegaPipe seems useless for memcached. But as I mentioned, memcached has a global lock, and we found that almost 50% of CPU cycles are being wasted for bitrate locking. So we modified memcached to use only fine-grained locks without the global lock and measure the performance again. In this case, both MegaPipe and baseline performed much better, and MegaPipe could yield about 15% of performance improvement. This means that your application itself is not very scalable, then MegaPipe may not be effective much. For Nginx web server test, we used mixed connection length and object sizes, and the distribution of them was based on the HTTP traces collected from Yahoo content delivery networks. And the performance result shows that MegaPipe can improve the performance of Nginx by 50% or more. Now let me wrap up with this talk with some discussion and conclusion. Let me quickly introduce most relevant previous work with MegaPipe. Flex SC also achieved system call batching, but Flex SC must spawn a kernel thread for every outstanding I/O operation because of the semantics of BSD socket API. We solved this scalability problem by introducing new API based on the completion notification model. For the shared listening queue, shared listening socket issues, the recent affinity accept work proposed partitioned accept queue. Our approach is very similar, but MegaPipe gives applications explicit control over how to partition the listening socket thanks to the new API. The MostBench project addressed many VFS scalability issues of Linux operating system. Most of its modifications were already applied to the baseline kernel we used for the experiment. MegaPipe introduces lightweight socket to completely bypass the scalability issues rather than mitigating them. And the good thing is that we embraced all the optimization techniques with a single abstraction, the per core channel between kernel and user. So here is the take-home messages. BSD socket API performs very poorly with mesh-oriented workloads where connections are short or messages are small-sized. Even worse, it does not scale well with multi-core CPUs. MegaPipe introduces a new OS abstraction, the per-core channel between kernel and user. This channel abstraction enables various performance optimization techniques for high-performance network I/O. Thank you for your attention, and I will happily take your question.
I am Mendel Rosenblum from Stanford University. You know, people that complained about overheads of sockets in the past basically kind of gave up on them and did things like kernel bypass network interfaces, you know, the work of Thorsten von Eichen of UNET in the 1990s. And even today, if you look out, InfiniBand verbs and QPairs and things like that basically don't use sockets and stuff. And I'm just wondering, you know, are your lightweight sockets good enough that these people can quit just bypassing everything, or did you compare with that?
Yeah, so lightweight socket doesn't mean that you should always bypass the overhead. It's kind of opportunistic offloading. So in most cases, you don't need the full generality of sockets, but so we just skip all the overheads. But when you really need it, when you really need the generality of sockets, then you can explicitly say, oh, I want the generality of sockets, so please convert this lightweight socket into a regular file descriptor.
I actually was asking about, you know, these people just don't want any of sockets, basically. They just want to get the message in the lowest possible latency. And I was wondering if you compare it against, you know, a system, one of these systems that does that, and, you know, how lightweight are lightweight sockets compared?
Sorry, I didn't understand your question. Would you rephrase the question, please?
We can take this offline.
We'll talk. Thank you. Yeah.
So, Michio Honda from NEC. So, the small question. So, what happens if the user process having the megapipe descriptor forks?
I missed the last part.
A fork, and the.
Fork.
Yeah, so what happens on the cloned process? So, the pointing the same megapipe descriptor, or something different happens?
Actually, it's a little bit of implementation details. And if a process with the megapipe channel spawns with the fork system call, actually the megapipe channel itself does not spawn. It's marked as closed on execute.
So
it's not duplicated when you fork. When you fork.
Okay.
Jitu Padhi, MSR, nice work. So quick question, for short connections, your message is basically batch these operations together, right?
For short connections, yeah. What?
You are saying batching is what gets you, batching these IO operations is what's going to get you some of the improvement.
So short connections are mostly about the multi-core scalability, and batching is most effective for short messages, not short connections.
Okay. Yep. So if you have a number of short messages, if you do batching, you're going to basically delay these messages, right? Yep. And I'd argue that most of the systems where short messages are passed around are fairly delay sensitive. So do you have a trade-off in terms of how you have to hold these messages back to allow for a certain amount of batching to happen, right?
Sorry, would you a little bit slow down, please? Okay.
You have to hold these messages back to allow them to be batched into reasonable sizes, yes?
Right.
Okay, so if you did that, you're going to introduce an additional delay in completion time. So what's the trade-off?
So you talk about latency.
Yeah.
Actually, the batching size of megapipe is pretty small. Like, it's currently like 32 IO operations at the most. And actually, the modern network interface card have very large packet queues in the need. So the batching is relatively small, so it does not affect latency much. I have some latency graphs here. And so the point is that it does not affect the median latency, and actually for high concurrency situation, the tail latency significantly reduced with batching because you have higher throughput, so you can effectively reduce the queuing latency at the NIC. Yeah.
Thanks.
Hi, this is Ali from Stanford. I was wondering if you've considered like scheduling interactions and how you deliver IOs to what queues, or is it just is it just a round robin process?
What do you mean by scheduling? Would you give?
Yeah. So how do you issue, for example, accepts to the multiple threads and cores? Like if a core is descheduled and it's asleep, do you actually still put it in that queue or do you skip that queue? Because there's some latency associated with waking up cores and whatnot.
Basically the basic assumption of using MapPipe is that you have only one thread for each core. So basically, there is only one thread for each core, so there's not much scheduling distance to be there.
Well, there's other system processes that'll be running in the background too, so
yeah,
that doesn't.
So it's basically like any other user level applications. So it does not do anything special about this with scheduling.
Okay, thanks.